All right, welcome Fairfax. We are so glad to have you with us today on this first weekend in May. Can you believe it that this is the first weekend in May? We're so glad to have you with us. Welcome to those who are a part of our Northern Virginia community, our local community here. Welcome to those that are part of our global community. Welcome to those of you who are new and are here maybe for the first time. We are so glad that you're here. We would love to connect with you. And on the screen, there's a little button at the top that just says new here. If you will click that, give us just a little bit of information. We'll follow up personally with you and answer any questions that you have, help you get connected here in a little bit more deeper way. And for those of you that are new and those of you that maybe you've been connected to Fairfax for a while, but you haven't yet gotten involved in a small group, small groups are huge around this place, and we talk about it every weekend. Small groups are the way that we do life together. They are the way that we care for each other and pray for each other and study together and develop new relationships, new friendships, all of that. And so if you would like to get involved in a small group, we would love to help you find the perfect small group for you. And there's a button at the top of the screen just says groups. Click that, and we will follow up and make sure that you find a group that just is perfect for you. There's a couple of other ways that you can engage while you're watching today. There's a chat feature that's on our website, and all you have to do is put in your name and become a part of kind of that community that can connect to each other during the service. We have hosts that would love to greet you, answer any questions that you have about the church. And then down at the bottom of the screen, and sometimes this gets overlooked, but there's a little button that says live prayer. And you can click that, and at any time during the service, there is someone who is glad to connect with you and to pray for you. I know that sometimes we become a part of a service like this, and it's like, okay, this is great, what's happening, but there's something going on in my soul right now. I just need to pray with someone. And so if there's something that's going on that you say, I would just love to be able to pray with someone today, just click that button. Someone will connect with you, and they'll pray with you right now at any time in the midst of the service. One of the things that I'm really excited about that is starting this week at Fairfax is we are expanding our Instagram Live programming. We're starting a new series that is called Hey Fairfax, and it's going to be on Tuesday till Friday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 8 p.m., every Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., and just some very unique programming. It's going to be folks from all of our different departments that are going to be sharing, and some informative stuff, some inspirational stuff, some fun stuff, just a lot of great stuff. Things like coffee with Ronnie and kind of some tips from our Fairfax kids about how to homeschool, which a lot of you are doing in this season that you never thought you'd be doing or you never thought you'd be doing this long. Some insights from our community life folks about just navigating and experiencing just self-care during this time. Just a ton of programming. That'll be every Tuesday through Friday, 8 p.m. And all you have to do to connect is just follow us on Instagram, and it's at Fairfax CC, at Fairfax CC. All right, I want to say thanks again to all of you for your continued generosity. It's just been amazing during this online-only season that we are in. This last week, we had 6 new families that began giving to Fairfax for the first time. Since we started online only, the last 7 weeks, we've had 52 families that have started giving to this church. This is in the middle of a pandemic, folks. Like, this is in this crazy season. All of these new families that are getting on board, becoming a part of this generous community. And I mentioned a few weeks ago that we ended March in the black. Our income was over our expenses, which was just incredible. We celebrated God's provision. I just got the numbers last night. April, we ended in the black again. Our income was over our expenses. And again, we are just celebrating in God's provision. And it's allowing us to do a number of things. It's allowing us to keep advancing the kingdom in really new and exciting ways. It is allowing us to do some over and above things for our local partners and in this time of crisis that they're in, and be able to kind of do some extravagantly generous things with them. As I mentioned last week, it's allowing us to continue to support all of our global partners and all of our global church planters and our church plants. And that's been amazing. And I just met with some of them this last week. And just to be able to say, hey, you're good. Nothing's going to change in terms of our support. In fact, in some cases, we've been able to do some extra things for our global partners during this really crazy season that they are in. And so thank you so much for your generosity. We've got a little video that we want you to see. It's from five of our global partners. And I just want to mention real quick who they are. It's Capstone Ministries that rescues street kids in Kisumu, Kenya, and helps to reconcile them and restore them to their families of origin. Just amazing, amazing work. Teach Haiti, that is providing quality education for the poorest of the poor in Haiti. It's our church down in Santo Domingo, Iglesia Acción, Misionares, and they are doing some amazing work. It's our longest partner that we have, and they have now planted 17 daughter churches. So we have 17 granddaughter churches down there. And the Istanbul Project, which is one of our newest church plants in Istanbul, that is bringing the message of Christ in a culture in which there really is little proclamation of the gospel. And then Patrick and Jamie Noctegal, who are our regional coordinators in Europe and the Middle East, and doing some amazing, amazing work there. Take a look at this video.
Hello, Fairfax. This is Dan Schmelzer from Kisumu, Kenya and Capstone Ministries, giving you a quick update on how things are here in Kenya.
Hello, Fairfax. We are the McMahon family in Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Hi, Fairfax. We're Patrick, Jamie, and Marco Noctegal. We're the regional coordinators for global strategy in Europe and the Middle East.
Hi, Fairfax. This is Juan and Miriam from the Dominican Republic.
Hi, God bless you.
And this is
Hernan, God bless you, everyone.
Hi, Fairfax. How are you doing? We're saying hi from Istanbul, from the sixth week of our quarantine isolation. And it's a crazy time, as you probably are experiencing yourselves. But we see God is working and moving among us, and it's really, really encouraging.
The way we've seen God at work is that we know He's always faithful. And this pandemic has given us unique opportunities to make a difference for our neighbors and relying on God a lot more.
We sent our workers home on April 2nd to shelter in place for the month of April. They'll report back next Monday and begin individually reporting and making phone calls on our families and the 35 students who are enrolled in secondary school.
We don't always look like this. We usually look a lot worse, but we know it's a really difficult time for everybody, but we're really hopeful that it'll be a time where people start to reevaluate their lives and what's important, how family's important, how maybe a slower life is important, how there's more to life than materialism. And maybe throughout all of this, people will begin to ask some deeper spiritual questions.
We have more participants, more friends who are interested in kind of joining our Zoom services. We've had, we doubled the small groups, so we have more people regularly attending small groups now than we had before, which is crazy. We still wonder somehow how God is using all this.
And we also are seeing God operating in a different way. He is pushing us to leave our building and go out and in our homes, and from our homes to go to the whole world, sharing the gospel, showing the world that we are the light of this world.
So we're praying for everyone's safety, and we thank you for your years of unwavering support.
God bless you, and thanks for your support.
All right, I mentioned I had an opportunity this week to meet with almost all of our global partners, almost all of our church planters. And, you know, even in kind of normal times, whatever that is, their tasks, their ministries, their jobs are almost impossible. But during a pandemic like we are going through, it makes it even more challenging. So your continued support, your faithfulness is absolutely amazing. And it's bringing life to these organizations. It's bringing life to those, literally bringing life to those that they serve. And so thank you so much. If you want today to give as a part of your worship experience, there is a little button at the top of the screen just says give. You can give that way, or you can text Fairfax Give to 77977. Okay, one more thing before we jump into the message today. One of the hardest things about this season is the fact that it's just hard to know what is going on in your lives, right? Like, even though we're connected at some level and some are involved in small groups and some are involved in serving, it's just really hard when you're not face to face. It's hard to know what's really going on. And we want to know what is going on. We love you. We care about you. We want to know what's going on in your life. And so on Tuesday, we're gonna send out an email. You're gonna get an email that's just a little short survey that I want you to fill out. It's very short. It takes about 3 or 4 minutes. It doesn't take a long time, but it gives us a little idea of how you're doing. Our whole congregation, we're sending this out to the whole congregation, thousands of folks, thousands of households, and we wanted to know how you are doing and to kind of get a little idea of how we are doing as well. And so that's going to go out on Tuesday. Look for that on Tuesday, and thank you for taking the time to just help us connect a little bit better during this season. All right, we're in the third week of this series that's called Carriers. It's a study in 2 Corinthians, and 2 Corinthians is really an amazing book because it reminds us of God's ability to take the most challenging circumstances, the hardest circumstances, the most difficult things that we're going through in life, and to redeem them in such a way that God can use them to accomplish His mission in the world. And we are carriers of that mission. And the first week we talked about how we are carriers of a death that actually leads to life. And last week, Josh Falk did an incredible job of talking about how we are carriers of a brokenness that actually leads to reconciliation, actually leads to wholeness, a wholeness in our relationship with God, a wholeness in our relationship with others. And we are called to be ministers of reconciliation. And if you missed either of those two sermons, I would encourage you to go back and listen to them on our website or listen to them on our podcast. This week, we're looking at chapter 8 in 2 Corinthians. First week, it was chapter 4. Second week, it was chapter 5. This week is chapter 8. And we're talking about what it means to be carriers of a poverty that actually leads to generosity. So chapter 8 in 2 Corinthians is actually a fundraising letter, okay? Like, you thought that this was the only era in which you get bombarded with fundraising letters. No, it goes all the way back to the Apostle Paul. Paul is trying to collect funds from a number of churches, including the Corinthian church, to help famine victims in Judea, in and around Jerusalem. And on his third missionary journey, he went around collecting an offering that he could take to them. And one of the churches that he visited and got an offering was from the Corinthian church, but they had promised to do more. And so this, in this letter, he's writing them to remind them of that promise and to kind of fulfill that which they had promised to do. And in chapter 8, it gives us these incredible insights into like what generosity is all about, like principles related to generosity. And so I just want to kind of unpack those for you a little bit today. The first one is this: generosity invites us to examine our lifestyle. It invites us to examine our lifestyle. This is how Paul's message on generosity begins in chapter 8. And now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Because out of their most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability, entirely on their own. They urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints, the privilege of sharing in this offering for these famine victims in Jerusalem. And they did not do as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. Now, the church in Corinth was located in what is now the southern part of Greece, near Athens. And it was a very, very affluent church. Lots of resources, very talented, very gifted, just a really, really affluent congregation. The Macedonian church was located in the northern part of now what is modern day Greece, and it was a very, very poor church. So Paul starts this kind of fundraising appeal to the Corinthian church by telling the Corinthian church, telling these affluent folks, like how generous these folks that are dealing with profound poverty have been in responding to this need. And Paul is not trying to shame the Corinthian church. He's not trying to guilt them into giving. In fact, when we get a little bit further along in this chapter, you'll see that that's exactly what he's not trying to do. But what he's trying to help them understand is what generosity is all about. Now, when Paul says that the Macedonian church gave beyond their ability, he's not saying that they gave everything they had away. He's not saying that they put themselves in such a position that now they need to be recipients of an offering for them. He's just saying that they adjusted their lifestyle, meager though it already was, they adjusted their lifestyle in order to be more generous. They adjusted their lifestyle in order to respond to this need in Jerusalem. They adjusted their lifestyle in order to advance the kingdom. Now, we're in a season where a lot of people are adjusting their lifestyle, right, because of this pandemic. And you may find yourself in that category as well. Lots of folks are adjusting their lifestyle. Lots of folks are saying, hey, we can put this off. We don't need to do this now. We can wait later for this. Like, we can make these adjustments because of everything that we are dealing with. That's what the Macedonian church was doing, except it wasn't in response to a pandemic. It wasn't in response to some worldwide thing that was going on. It was so that they could be more generous. They were adjusting their lifestyle. They were saying, we're not going to do things. We're not going to involve ourselves in things. We're not going to purchase things, all of that, so that we can be more generous. We're trying to do that as a church in our own way. Like, there are some things in this season that we are saying, you know what? We can wait on that. We can push that back. We don't need to do that right now, so that we can be more generous. We want to be more generous with our local partners. We want to be more generous with what's going on around the world. We want to be this increasingly generous community. And so many of you are doing that as well. So many of you are adjusting your lifestyle. You're saying, we're not going to do this right now. We're not going to purchase that right now, not just in response to the pandemic, but so that you can be more generous, so that you can respond to the needs around you, so that you can advance the kingdom. It's incredible to see that. And it's not just like generosity with your tithes and offerings. It's all kinds of generosity. We put the trailer out in the parking lot this week and we asked you to bring in food items so that we could help respond to food insecurity in our community. And you filled the trailer up like multiple times this week. Like, we just kept unpacking it and you kept filling it up. And then we would unpack it and then you would fill it up. Like, we gave thousands of pounds of food away and distributed them so that people in our community who are dealing with hunger issues, that they might be fed. You're being generous with your time. Like, you are calling people, reaching out to people, caring for people. You're being generous with your emotions. Like, even in the midst of your own emotional struggles and own spiritual struggles, that you are taking the time to care for other people emotionally, that you are being responsible and you are being generous with your prayers. We're coming together at 11:02 to pray as a congregation. Just so many ways that you are being, so many ways that you are adjusting your lifestyle in order to be more generous during this time. That's the first thing that Paul's teaching us, is that generosity invites us to examine our lifestyle. The second thing that generosity does is that generosity invites us to examine our heart. Look at what Paul says down in verse 7 and 8. He said, So we urged Titus, since he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion this act of grace on your part. But just as you excel in everything, as you excel in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in your love for us, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. Now listen to this. Paul says, I'm not commanding you. But I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. I'm not commanding you. Now, it's interesting that Paul says, I'm not commanding you when it comes to this issue of generosity, because Paul is never hesitant to command the church. Like, his letters are filled with commands. His letters are filled with, thus saith the Lord. His letters are filled with commands that he gives the church. So why is it when it comes to generosity that Paul says, I'm not commanding you in this issue of generosity? Well, it's because generosity is an issue of the heart. That at its core, generosity is an issue of the heart. Now, the Bible is pretty clear about how the opposite of generosity is greed. And the Bible is pretty clear also that greed is a sin and that God wants to take away the grip of greed in our lives. But greed is so different than the other things that we struggle with. Like, it's so different than other sins. Like, when we lie, we know we're lying. When we steal, we know we're stealing. When we get angry and lose our temper, we know that we've lost our temper. When we commit adultery, like, we know that we're committing adultery. No one commits adultery and goes, well, I didn't even realize what was going on. No, we know that we're doing that. But greed is different. Like, with greed, we're not quite sure, like, where the line is, and it's because there's no absolute dividing line from when we move from being a greedy person to a generous person, or when we move from being a generous person to a greedy person. Now, someone will say, well, what about the tithe, right? Like, certainly giving 10% of what you have away to the Lord and living on the 90% moves you from being a greedy person to a generous person, right? Well, not necessarily. Like in Luke 11, Jesus actually condemns a group of tithers. He condemns the Pharisees who are faithful with their tithe. And he doesn't condemn them because they're tithing. In fact, he affirms the fact that they're tithing. He condemns them because they stop at the tithe. He condemns them because they've drawn a line and there's so much more that they could do to have impact in the world. And they draw the line and say, no, this is a line. We are going no further than this. This is why no one has ever come to me and said, Rod, I need to talk to you because I'm dealing with a greed issue. Now, folks have come and said, I need to talk to you because I'm dealing with an anger issue, or I'm dealing with a sexual integrity issue, or I'm dealing with a relationship issue, or I'm dealing with the issue that I don't seem to have a good prayer life. Like, people have come with all of those issues and said, yeah, I want to talk about. No one has ever come and said, you know what I need to deal with? I need to deal with my greed issue. And you know what? Just complete candor, like everything on the table. I have a lot of folks who have spoken into my life, a lot of people that I talk to about the struggles that I deal with. I've never approached any of them either and said, you know, I need to deal with my greed issues. You know why that is? Because none of us think we're greedy. Like, we know someone who's greedy. We can point to someone who's greedy. We're judgmental about people that we think are greedy, but we don't think that we're greedy. And that's why generosity has to be a matter of the heart. Because if it gets reduced down to just an act of obedience, If generosity gets reduced down to just an act of obedience, then we start to kind of get all wrapped up in trying to figure out, like, when is it enough and still be pleasing to God? We get all wrapped up into how much do I have to give rather than how much can I give away. We get all wrapped up in do we tithe on the gross or do we tithe on the net. We get all wrapped up in all of this stupid stuff and we stop growing in the grace of giving and we miss what generosity is all about. So generosity invites us. It invites us to examine our lifestyle, and generosity invites us to examine our heart. But thirdly, generosity invites us to do something else. It invites us to examine our motivations. Look at what Paul says in verse 13 and following. He says, "Our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. Then there will be equality. As it is written, he who gathered much did not have too much, and he who gathered little did not have too little." Now that last verse, verse 15, is a quote from Exodus 16. When the Israelites were in the wilderness, they just didn't have the means to provide the food that they needed at that time, which they typically would have done through agriculture, through farming, through hunting, but none of that was really available to them. And so God, in his miraculous providing way, he provides manna for them that drops from the sky and kind of gathers along the ground. And every morning, the Israelites would go out and they would gather that manna, and it could be formed into little cakes and then eaten. It wasn't like the most exciting meals. It wasn't the most exciting diet, but it provided for their basic needs. Now, apparently, and I, to be quite honest, I've read this verse a lot, and it really, until this week, it didn't quite jump out at me that apparently there were Israelites who gathered more than others gathered. Like maybe because they were younger, maybe because they were faster, maybe because they were stronger, whatever, that they were able to gather more manna, and then there were others who couldn't gather enough manna. And what we're reminded of in that passage is that that was fine. It didn't matter. Because those who gathered way more, they shared what they gathered with those who gathered less. And that's what that phrase means. He who gathered much did not have too much. He gathered a ton, but he didn't have too much. And he who gathered a little did not have too little because there was all of this generosity that was going on. But, if someone gathered a lot of manna and they hoarded it, they held on to it, they didn't share it, we're told that what happened to that is that it began to rot. It began to spoil. And Paul is saying the same thing is true with our money. Like, it's okay to gather. It's okay to make money. It's okay to make a lot of money. Like, there's no problem with that. But that if we gather just to gather, if we gather just for ourselves, what Paul is saying is that it begins to spoil. It begins to destroy our soul. In some ways, money is like fire. Like, if you think about fire, is fire good or is fire bad? Well, it all depends, right? If the fire is in the fireplace at home and it's providing this beautiful glow and warmth in the room, then fire is really good. But if that same fire is out on the rug and it begins to burn, it creates, at the minimum, it creates a scar and maybe even burns the whole house down. And in that case, fire is really, really bad. And Paul says that money is like that. That money in and of itself is not good or bad. It all depends on what you do with it. And that's the same point Paul is making in chapter 9. He says this in verse 6 of chapter 9. He says, remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Now, some people have taken that text, and I think taken it out of its context, and tried to turn it into some kind of prosperity gospel, right? Some kind of investment strategy where the more you give, the more money you give, the more money you get. Like it becomes this investment strategy, like that really isn't about giving, it's ultimately really about getting. Now, lots of problems with that particular interpretation of this passage. Let me just mention two. One, there are a lot of really, really wealthy people in the world, people who have millions of dollars, people who have billions of dollars, who are very, very greedy with their money. And just because they're greedy with their money doesn't mean that they don't make more money. In fact, sometimes it seems like the more greedy they are, the more money they make. And there are some people in the world who are incredibly generous with their resources and don't necessarily have a lot of money. That's one of the problems. One of the other problems is this, is that to interpret this verse in that way, it actually misses the metaphor that Paul is using in talking about generosity. The metaphor is about sowing and reaping. And when you sow something in the ground, you don't reap back the same thing. If you sow seed, you don't reap more seed. Like, what farmer is going to get excited about the fact that they sow seed and then they reap more seed? Know that when you sow seed, what you reap, the harvest is the fruit of that seed. The harvest is whatever it is that that seed produces. And Paul is saying that the same is true with our money. We don't sow our money generously so that we can get more money back. We sow our money generously so that we can reap the fruit that is produced by our resources. Now, what is that? What is the fruit that is reaped by our resources? Well, he tells us in verse 9. He says, as it is written, he has scattered abroad his gifts to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. That's a quote from Psalm 112 that's talking about the righteousness of God. And Paul is saying that when we sow generously, that what we reap is righteousness. But the Hebrew word for righteousness is not just about moral rightness, that it's actually about right relationships. Think about this. God's whole mission in the world is about making relationships right. It's about making our relationship with God right. It's about making our relationships with others in the world, whether they are people that are like us or different than us, whether they are people that believe the same thing we believe or believe something totally different, like whoever it is, it's making those relationships right. It's loving our neighbor and being willing to respond to their needs, whether it's physical needs or emotional needs or relational needs or whatever the needs are. It's about making our relationship right with creation, about making our relationship right with the environment, about stewarding the things that God has created and entrusted to our care, making those things right. That's the harvest that Paul is talking about. And what Paul is saying is that when we sow generously, when we actively engage in God's mission to heal this broken world, that's the harvest that we reap. It's a harvest of righteousness. It's a harvest of right relationships. That's the harvest. And then the fourth thing that we learn in this passage is this, that generosity invites us to examine the way of Jesus. It invites us to examine our lifestyle. It invites us to examine our heart. It invites us to examine our motivations. But it also invites us to examine the way of Jesus. He says in verse 9 of chapter 8, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich." Wow. Paul is saying that when Jesus came to this earth, that he was willing to become poor. He was willing to give up everything that was his. He was willing to give up all of the prerogatives of heaven. He was willing to give up everything that he possessed so that we might become rich, so that we might have everything that belongs to Jesus, that Jesus was willing to give up everything that was his so that we might have everything that is his, that he was willing to give up life and enter into our death so that we might enter into his life, that he was willing to give up wholeness and enter into our brokenness so that we might enter into his wholeness, that he was willing to give up the hope of heaven and enter into our despair so that we might enter into his hope. That is the way of Jesus. It's a willingness to be poor. It's a willingness to let go. It's a willingness to hold on to things and stuff loosely. It's a willingness to surrender so that others might be rich, so that others might be made whole, so that others might be reconciled to God, so that others might experience hope, others might experience life, others might experience light. Paul says, I don't want you to be generous out of obedience. I want you to be generous because you are followers of Jesus, and that is the way of Jesus. And that when you are a follower of Jesus, that will become your way as well. Now, here's the thing. This sermon makes absolutely no sense at all if you are not a follower of Jesus. Like, all of this is about being a follower of Jesus. You cannot follow the way of Jesus until you are a follower of Jesus. You cannot experience the wholeness of Jesus until you have entered into Jesus' holiness, until you have embraced what he has done for you on the cross. And so for some of you, like, you're followers of Jesus, and this is about, yeah, I want to live the way of Jesus. I want to follow Jesus and live out the way of Jesus. For others of you, it's like, this is the moment to say yes to Jesus, to become a follower of Jesus and to embrace his love for you, his forgiveness for you, his grace for you. And I just want to give you an opportunity to do that. Let's pray. God, we give you thanks for what you have done for us. We give you thanks for your generosity for us. We give you thanks that you became rich, or you became poor so that we might become rich, that you laid down everything that was yours so that we might have everything that is yours, that you entered into our death so that we could enter into your life. You entered into our despair so that we could enter into your hope. You entered into our darkness so that we could enter into your light. That's the way of Jesus. And we want to live the way of Jesus. And Lord, I pray for those who are watching today and are not followers of Jesus yet, Lord, I pray that today is the day that they might say yes to your grace, yes to your forgiveness, yes to your hope, that this would be the day this would be the day that they become a follower of Jesus. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.